A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is Thursday, 10th of June, 2021. We will be continuing with this book, The Essence of Infinite Meaning, teaching from the adapted verse of the Sutra of Infinite Meanings. We are at page 265. Just relax body and mind and maintain some form of attention. So as usual, we shall have our half an hour of awareness-based meditation. We will off the light, then you can begin your meditation. Just relax and silence your mind. Don't try to know, don't try to do anything. Then maintain awareness so that you can allow your whatever thinking or sankhara activity or mundane mental movement slow down until it becomes very, very quiet and still. That's how you develop the awareness to be aware of your true mind, the silent mind, and stay with this silent mind. This is the meditative mind. This one can understand whatever that is going on within the moment because it's aware from within. Whatever that arises from your senses, sense door consciousness, your five aggregates of form and mind, it will understand. And through that, the silent mind observe and develop wisdom. You will come to understand clearly who are you, what are you, and what are these five aggregates of form and mind all about. You can realize their universal characteristics, the three universal characteristics of impermanence, leading to suffering when you attach and cling. And because it's impermanent, you know it's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can hold on to, cling on to, and grasp on to, and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. So because of that, it is anatta, non-self, not what you think. And because it's anatta, it's impermanent, it's dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena, there is no reality. That's why anatta has another deeper meaning. Empty nature of existence. All of existence. All of the phenomenal world of consciousness is not real, not what you think. They arise and they pass away. Everything that arises, dependent on condition, they will cease to be when conditions cease to be. So all of the coming and the going, the birth and the death, they are not what you think. They are just nature's phenomena, following nature's law, abiding, sustenance, and disappearing. So on this, when you develop this silent mind to meditate, you can awaken to that universal characteristics, that profound wisdom within. Then we will know how to live life. We will understand clearly who are we, what are we, and what life is. All of nature's law, all of truth, the essential Dhamma, we can witness them whenever they arise. Then you will understand the deep meaning of what truth is. Truth is the reality. Truth is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. Okay, so this is a brief explanation and summary of what this awareness-based meditation is. It's very different from thought-based meditation. Thought-based meditation cannot develop wisdom. It can only develop knowledge. Whereas this awareness-based meditation, which is beyond thought, beyond mind, can discern all of nature's phenomena and awaken to it. It can insight into phenomena. It can develop the understanding of what is going on, how all mundane mind arise, and how to wrong view, delusion, self-delusion, sub-clarity. We stir our mind, we react to sense experience. And through all this, we input the wrong content of consciousness, thereby arising all the wrong thought that has the evil of greed, hatred, and delusion, thereby conditioning us into negativity of mind state. And that's how it create karmic conditioning. And through karmic, the friction of it leads to affliction, suffering, misery. You reap what you sow. So all this understanding can arise when we develop this inner awareness, the awareness nature, which is our true mind, the silent mind, to observe, to see clearly and to understand. Then through the understanding, we straighten our view, we develop wisdom, and we use that to live life. We use that to help us understand life. Then we can really transform ourselves, character-wise, personality-wise, understanding-wise, so that we can be a true blessing to the world, to all of humanity. Okay, now I will set the 30 minutes of alarm. Then you can have your awareness-based meditation. You all can slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the three mind states that you need to develop the meditation in daily life, especially the daily mindfulness, and also to live life, because these are the three mind state that has clarity. When you are mindful, aware, there is no thought, there is clarity, there is sensitivity, then you can actually develop a lot of understanding. You can see all of your subtle mental intention behind everything you do. Then the mundane mind like become very easy for you to see, to understand. And all of phenomena, whether it's physical, mental, or nature's phenomena, you can see them clearly whenever they arise, sustain themselves, and ceases to be. That's how you can silence your mind to observe all these things. If the mind is not silent, it's most of the time lost in thought, preoccupied with the thinking, the thought process. Then when you are involved in all this thinking, preoccupied with the mental emotion, the mental movement, the content of consciousness, then you cannot be sensitive, you cannot be aware, you doesn't know what is happening within the moment, because your mind has been preoccupied with the thinking process, with the stirring and the reaction of mind. When you experience something in real life, we are using this book, The Essence of Infinite Meaning, teachings from the adapted verse of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, Hu Liang Yi Jing. Okay, I will read on. If they desire blessings and virtue, the wise should give extensively. If we want to cultivate fields of blessings, we must develop our wisdom and understand that material wealth should be used in the world. So these are very beautiful statements. If people, normal people, they actually crave for blessings, and virtue. But if you desire or crave for blessing, actually, you can never have it. Blessings has to be cultivated with understanding. But cultivator of the way is different because they have the wisdom, they have the understanding. Everything they do is filled with blessings. And their mind states are all virtuous because of their wisdom and their understanding. That's why here the commentary say, if they desire blessings and virtue, then the wise should give extensively. Because the wise one, whatever they do, is always with all this virtue and blessings. Then if you want to cultivate the field of blessing, you must develop all wisdom. So field of blessing, you need wisdom, definitely. Then there's another part that you have to understand. You have to understand that all of material wealth that we have acquire or own should be used in the world because you cannot take them along for the good of the many. So this is the gist of cultivation. And if you really want to understand, you need to cultivate wisdom. Then understand the purpose of the form and mind, the materialistic wealth and all these things. The other way to look at it is like they call it corporate responsibility, or whatever that we receive from society. As always mentioned, people who are successful, we have received so much from society. So we should give back to society when we have the means. So corporate social responsibility is this. From society, you acquire them or receive them. Then when the condition is there, when the opportunity is there, we should play our role. If the materially wealthy can go along and among people to aid those in need, if they can turn their ambition forever, expanding profits into love for saving those who are suffering and cultivate blessings through their giving, they will truly be among the wise, those replete with both compassion and wisdom. So the wise one are people who has developed compassion and wisdom. And these are the people who really have the Dhamma. For example, Tsuchi volunteer, Mr. Pang and Mr. Xi, they have been wholeheartedly carrying out and sharing Tsuchi's mission in South Africa for many years. Not only have they been helping the Zulu people to improve their living situation, but they have also recruited many Zulu volunteers to take part in Tsuchi's work. Now countless seeds of love have already been sown in the local soil, in the barn alone. There are over 5,000 Zulu volunteers. Although they live in poverty, because they have devoted themselves to helping others through their volunteer work, they still feel very happy. These Zulu volunteers often go to visit the poor and care for the AIDS patient. They are often singing as they walk, moving to the rhythm of the song. Many of them are heavy set and not very agile, and some need to use crutches as they walk on the crooked and rugged mountain terrain and roads. Yet even as they slowly make their way to their destination, they all have broad smile on their face. Although poor and not in the best of health, these volunteers are very wise. They know that because they have the strength to help others, though they may be materially poor, they are spiritually wealthy. Therefore, no matter how far they have to go, they are able to endure the physical pain, the fatigue, and are very happy to serve. The Zulu are not only different from the Chinese in skin, color, bodywork, and the way of life, but most are also Christians. However, after encountering Shiji and volunteering, they have a deeper realization of the principle that those who want to go to heaven must first benefit others in the world. Therefore, they make full use of their lives to help others. In caring for 8 patients, they carefully bathe them, feed them, clean their surroundings, and give them some material food. As long as the volunteers still have strength in their bodies, they do everything they can to help. Thus, we can clearly see that charity and good deeds are not the monopoly of the rich. So this is a very good example. The Shiji volunteer who inspired the Zulu volunteer, Mr. Pang, is also not very rich, but he persevered in his aspiration to go into the community to benefit others. He vigorously promoted way of applying the Buddha Dharma to daily living and share the Shiji spirit with everyone he meets. Thus, he is willing to stay in South Africa for the long term in order to help others. Another Shiji volunteer, Mr. Xi, has also widely spread the deeply planted Shiji spirit there. He is committed to improve local education, building school, and helping the poor family so that every child can have a good learning environment. This is very, very noble. Thanks to these farmers in the world who are willing to tend their local field of blessings, it is possible for each of these seeds of love to one by one germinate and sprout. So we can see that we do not need a lot of money in order to give, to cultivate dana parami or generosity parami. If we desire blessing, the wise should give extensively. As long as we are willing to help others and cultivate blessing, we will not be poor in body and mind, but instead will be the wealthiest of people. This one is spiritually. So all this understanding are useful when you volunteer for volunteer work and all these things. Otherwise, it's not easy to endure all this. So as far as cultivation is concerned, there are many approaches to cultivation, to perfection. So different people do it differently. Shiji has Shiji's way. They start with compassion. Then they witness suffering. Compassion in action in real life. And they like to help out in situation where there is a lot of suffering, a lot of calamities, so that they can really be of help to people. They can be a blessing to all. So from there, they start to observe the world. They start to understand suffering, misery, karma, and how a lot of other less fortunate people who don't have the good karmic conditioning or good karma, how they are being afflicted, how they suffer, how they become miserable because of the lack of dhamma, lack of virtue, lack of blessings, parami. So all this is for you to see, and when you see, you develop gratitude. you develop what they call the sense of like understanding that because in the past we have cultivated, we have developed blessings and virtue and wisdom. That's why our life, after all, is not so bad. And most of us who have that dhamma, we will be very successful. We will thrive very well. And we will have the good life. But Tsuji's approach is different. They base their life on compassion in action to witness and see all this. Then the teaching is being slowly taught to them and assimilated to them. Then through their TV program, their Dhamma activity program, and the sharing by their founder, they develop the understanding of the Buddha Dhamma, especially cultivation on Noble Eightfold Path and how to apply them, how to really be a good Tsuji volunteer and mission worker, the four mission of Tsuji, to transform society, to transform the world, to relieve suffering, to give rise to compassion in action. Then we will have all the understanding. Then we will remind ourselves constantly, do not be heedless. If you are heedless, you will end up like all those suffering beings who has gone through misery and suffering and affliction, calamity, and a lot of karmic condition, especially weak, sick bodies, DNA coded with a lot of disease. So all this, when you help our institute, you will learn to witness them, that you see more and more of this, then you have faith in the teachings, in the Dhamma. And this is how you extensively widen your scope of understanding of the phenomenal of living beings, sentient beings, so that you can develop great understanding or wisdom, extensive wisdom, to do the work that you need if you want to walk the Bodhisattva way. But cultivation may not start all the time with this type of what they call approach. Cultivation can be done in many ways. To the Buddha, the three phases of Dhamma is very important. The first phase is Pariyatti. Pariyatti is the learning of the teaching, the Dhamma. So learning can be done in many ways. So the Buddha actually introduced the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. The first turning is through hearing of the suttas, the discourse of the Buddha. That is the first turning. Then nowadays, there are books, there are video, audio recorders, where you can listen to, and there is also the internet. Technology has made the Dhamma much more easier to approach and have access to. So when you are able to read them, now not only listen, you can also read where there is writing, there is transcript book, textbook, written Dhamma. So reading and hearing can be classified as first turning wisdom. Then after you have heard them, after you have read them, you can reflect, contemplate, and inquire to stabilize the understanding. giving rise to second turning wisdom, which the Buddha called Cintamaya Panya. The first turning wisdom is Sutamaya Panya. Then after that, you put it into practice. Putting it into practice is very important. Then whatever Dhamma that you have learned, if you don't put it into practice, it's like when you learn how to cook, you read the cookbook but never practice, you can never be good at it. You can never be skillful at it. So you have to put it into practice to understand it, so that all these beautiful Dhamma, the principles behind, can be a living reality within your form and mind, so that you can have the embodiment of this Dhamma within you. So this is what cultivation is all about. Phase two Dhamma is Patipatti. When you put the teaching into cultivation, it will develop another level of Dhamma understanding. Your cultivation is the most important, and you put it into practice or cultivation, it becomes the third turning wisdom. The Buddha called it Bhavana Maya Panya, wisdom born of Bhavana, meditative training. Then the third phase of Dhamma is Pativeda. From Pariyatti, you go into cultivation, Patipatti. Then when you have the Dhamma, when you are ready, when you have developed the understanding, you should move into the third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda, where you get to reap the fruit of your hard work, where you got to live the noble life of an enlightened being. So with this, you can be a blessing to all. So this third phase of Dhamma is the most beautiful phase of your life. This is where you can be a blessing to all of society, the environment, and humanity as a whole. And through this understanding, you can also have deeper understanding of life. You can live life to the fullest. You can really get to understand life deeply. Then you can also get to experience all of the pristine beauties and wonders of life. Then you know how to combine your understanding of both the conditioned Dhamma and the unconditioned Dhamma to truly understand life and live life, and to manifest as a noble one, so that you can truly benefit the world, benefit society, and be a blessing to all. So this is what Dhamma is all about. So for me, the more important thing is your own cultivation and understanding. Not until you are ready, it's not easy to do this work, to go the Bodhisattva way. But a choice is there, like the Buddha said, there are 64,000 Dhamma Dao. You can approach it from anywhere. So some prefer to move into life, like Suci, compassion in action, because this is the way to attract people. If they don't come into Suci as volunteer and to see their whatever work, they will never really understand all this. Then they will not even have the time to look at the teachings, the Dhamma. But because they are involved, it starts to develop the understanding, that realization. Of course, there are people who are very inclined in that approach. You know, that approach actually attracts a lot of suffering people. People who has a lot of problems, then also those who want to help out. And so initially they thought, oh, you want to help, come join Suci. So without knowing, they go. Then they start to experience and understand what Suci people do, especially recycling. They can see the benefits Then, of course, they go into the volunteer service to serve others and to be part of the CC missionary activity. Then they start to witness suffering, misery, and the reality of life and existence. That's how they will probe, inquire, then they will compare. Then most of them will come to understand. At first they thought their life was very miserable. They have very tough life, a lot of suffering, misery. But after joining Tsuji, they realize there are a lot of the karma worse. Karmically, they are worse off. And they really haven't seen people with such karmic problem until they witness them. Then they realize how beautiful all these people can turn around after joining Tsuji, after having the condition to be helped and served by Tsuji volunteers and members. So all these are the Tsuji way approach to learning the teaching and becoming living bodhisattvas. Whereas the other Buddhist tradition, they are different. Like Fagusan, the emphasis is on cultivation, practice, meditation, which is very good. But you can approach it from any of the traditions. Then you go to Fo Quang. Their emphasis is on setting up all this Buddhist academy or Buddhist studies. Their monastery, their temple, the way they design it, and the way they actually present all those things, they are very beautifully planned and built. That's why they specialize in Buddhist education. If you want to learn the Buddhist teaching, the suttas and all those things, in fact, Fo Quang is the best place to be. And the way they actually build all this temple, my nature rejoices and amazed. Yeah, I visited many of these Fo Quang San's monastery and temple. Of course, we went to Taiwan to visit all the Buddhist tradition and authority, and the trade was beautiful, really beautiful, meaningful. Then I had the opportunity to visit actually many of these Fo Quang San's monastery, and some are in Australia, a few places, and some in New Zealand, and also China and many other places. In fact, Taiwan also. And the states and all those things. So when you visit them, I have the opportunity to actually witness and talk to these people. The way they explain all this to us, it was beautiful. And I also had with us as Kayamita, Fo Quang member. Then they explained to me the drum. Fo Quang San and all those things, the drum. It's very well developed. Then you go there, you understand the tradition. It's been done in a very beautiful way. And the way they teach the Dhamma is very systematic, very beautiful. Then all this monastery and temple that they built, I believe at that time they already had 300 plus all over the world. And they are very, very well built, especially the one in Kaohsiung, Taiwan. We visited that one, we even stayed there for one or two nights, I remember. And it was really beautiful. Chen Fo Ta Tao, there is one like they design and build all the pagoda that point towards the Sammasambuddha. Very big statue at the end, and it's really glowing, golden hue, and all those things, so beautiful. And the annex building at the side also beautiful. And the other side is where the residential area, the Dhamma Hall, the meditation center, and all the education things, and their canteen, the place they serve their food and all those things were very beautiful. And the way they teach is different. That's why every tradition is different, their approach is different. And you can learn all of the traditions, value, understanding, then you become very complete. Then there's another one, the Zhongtai Chanshi one is about planting the seed of Bohi to walk the path of the Bodhisattva. And that one also, that old monk was very good. The temple also very beautiful, very meticulously built with a lot of very meaningful things incorporated. And you can feel the energy, the vibration there is so different, so beautiful. All the traditions I went to, they were very beautiful. Then I saw on the video there are a lot of other new and upcoming Buddhist tradition though. The way they actually built their way place is so impressive, so beautiful. And you can feel the nature there is so beautiful. So this is just to add on to what that sharing from that adapted verse is. Now we go back to the text. Okay, we supposed to move on to the next adapted verse. Sentient beings, habitual natures, and desire are varied. This is very true, you know, when it comes to sentient beings or living beings. Their habitual tendency, their habits, their desire, they are very varied. So the Buddha taught various Dhamma with the power of skillful means to deal with all these sentient beings. He opened up the provisional teaching to reveal the true Dhamma in accord with sentient beings' capabilities. The mind, the Buddha, and the sentient beings are no different in their nature. Because basically, sentient beings, the Buddha, they have this Buddha nature within. Then the mind, there are two types of mind. One is the mundane mind. So the difference between the Buddha and normal unenlightened sentient being is the Buddha is fully enlightened, awakened, connected to his true mind. There is clarity, the nature shine forth. But a sentient being is heedless, lost in thought, clouded Buddha nature. They never knew that they have another nature within. There is a true mind, that true silent mind, meditative mind. They didn't have any inkling of that nature. That's why they stay with the mundane mind. And they are most of the time heedless, lost in thought, think along. Seldom aware. So Master Xuan Hua used to explain this very beautifully. He said the Buddha and the enlightened being, they only differ by a single thought. A single thought of ignorance that condition all this. So when you understand, he always used this Mandarin word, 相差意念之间, a single thought of it. From there you start to fall. Whereas the Buddha has rooted it out and awakened and realized the true mind, the Buddha nature, the intrinsic pure Buddha nature. Okay, we move on. So I will go into the commentaries. We ordinary people have spent countless kapas transmigrating in the sixth realm. This is very true. Sixth realm is the sixth Dhamma realm or the 31 plane of existence. So in Mahayana, they cut short or they shrink the 31 plane of existence into only the sixth plane of existence or sixth realm. Because the last realm, the Deva, Brahma, and the formless realm, they classify them as the heavenly realm, Tian Fa Jie. And they call this the sixth realm, Liu Dao Lun Hui. Transmigrating within the sixth realm, Lun Hui, means birth and death within the 31 plane of existence, or six realms. This is an incalculable amount of time, means for eons and eons or eons of birth and death. We call it samsara. Therefore, we have accumulated deeply rooted habitual tendency. See, the author used this word. This is your karmic habitual tendency. They are not easy to eliminate. See, Zhen Yan Pastor, she also know that this is not easy to root out or eliminate. So habitual tendency are very deep rooted habits that we have deludedly hold on to, held on to for so long. Over time, a wide variety of habitual tendencies develop because of ignorance and delusion. For example, the way people live just a few decades ago was drastically different from the way they live today. Moral principles and ethics, lifestyle, clothing, customs, and popular trends have all changed enormously. 70 or 80 years ago, most people used kerosene lamp or candle lights for lighting and cooking. So when they cook in brick oven or on charcoal stove, they were the era of that time. But today, almost every household has a gas stove, electric lighting, air conditioning. With the flip of a switch, we can illuminate the house at night, heating it during winter and cool it during the summer. With the rapid changes in lifestyle, our civilization is advancing and new technology are constantly being developed. More and more buildings are going up everywhere. Demand for electricity has surged. Over extraction and over consumption of energy resources has resulted in the production of a large amount of carbon footprint, which causes severe air pollution. In recent years, scientists have been warning us about the greenhouse effect and appealing to everyone to reduce our energy consumption or to go towards green energy. So not only are there worries about shortage of energy resources, the overproduction of carbon dioxide is causing extreme climatic changes as well. We are also facing a crisis of water scarcity, water pollution. Water is a necessity of life. Think about it, without water, even something as simple as going for a bath to a bath becomes very difficult. Especially for Malaysian, we have water cut very often. When you have a few days of water cut, you can experience how vital and important water is. When you don't have water to drink, to eat, to wash, to bathe, then the worst is to flush your toilet. you can expect how tough and how difficult it is. So a lot of these things, amenities and utilities that we take for granted, if we don't really pay attention, these things are really vital for life. Yeah? And we need to conserve them. We need to really take care of our planet's resources so that we will not face problem and situation, because the human population is growing and there are more and more demand when we grow. So not only food and shelter, basically, we have developed a civilization where we use a lot of things, and a lot of these things go to waste and need recycling, especially our leftover food, clothing, even the cars, the tires, and all the furniture we use, the parts when we throw them away, the electronic things, the computers. That's why without recycling, our planet will choke to death. Then even our food waste. Luckily, our civilization has learned how to use them to produce what we call enzyme, fertilizer, manure, and all those things. So recycling is very key and very important. So all these are important understanding where we should reflect on and play our part. Our modern way of life is dependent on the excessive consumption of natural resources, and we have always been doing this for several decades, which have nurtured habits of indulgence. This is very true. Our habitual tendency are formed when our sense organs connect with the world around us because of our different nature and desire. When faced with certain external temptation, we may develop bad habits such as smoking, drinking, and other craving. Our desires are endless, and trying to satisfy them will create affliction or afflictive emotions in our relationship, trapping us in continuous suffering. Then nowadays, modern society, we use a lot of detergent, pesticide, insecticide, and a lot of things that are actually not healthy. Then all these are washed into the environment through our sewer system. That's why the engineers has to come up with public health engineering to mitigate all this. That's why we take care of sewage, but it's not easy. There are a lot of sewage plants fail due to lack of proper maintenance and other things. Then most of our public amenity, our way of treating industrial way is still very, very backward, or what we call environmental treatment of industrial waste pollution. There is still a very long way to go to improve on it. Then if we look around, the people within our own community, they are not really conscious of all this pollution. We dump all sorts of things into our river until they are so polluted. Then through property development, through mega project development, we created a lot of erosion. And this erosion has silted up a lot of places. Then deforestation and all those things has created a lot of environment hazard, pollution and all those things. So all this, we should actually inculcate civic consciousness so as to mitigate all this, so that our future generation will see the importance of taking care of environment. When we take care of environment take care of our life, because we live in harmony. We are one, the planet, the environment, and the living beings. Okay, I will read on a bit more, then we end. Because of our different nature and desire, when faced with certain external tendency, oh, we have finished all this, Okay, maybe we stop here, We stop here, Then we will have our toilet break. 3 minutes, Now it's 9:32, we come back 9:35, okay. Okay, so we'll continue. I think we are at page 269. So I will finish one more paragraph, then we stop. Because the capabilities and desire of sentient beings varied infinitely. Even if we all listen to the same Dhamma at the same time, each of us will have a different understanding. This is very true. The Buddha, after attaining enlightenment, first turned the Dhamma wheel at the deer park. So this is the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, expounding the Four Noble Truths to the five bhikkhu. See, the first sermon. Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the three turnings. The first is to understand Sorry, the first to understand was anat ajata kandanya. Yeah, actually it's kandanya, venerable kandanya. The other bhikkhu still did not understand thoroughly, so the Buddha had to explain the teachings again. Then two other bhikkhus understood. The last two make progress, but still did not comprehend completely. It was only after the turning of the Dhamma wheel that all five bhikkhus reached complete understanding. Actually, under the Theravada Sutta, the explanation is slightly different. In fact, when he turned the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, only Kandanya became a Sotapan, the first stage of sainthood. The rest of the four monks, they are still not enlightened as yet. Then the Buddha continued with the Anattalakkhana Sutta. When he spoke the Anattalakkhana Sutta, that sutta was so powerful, all five become arahants. See? That's why Anattalakkhana Sutta is very important. The suttas on anatta, understanding anatta, is very important. Anatta is not only non-self, it covers emptiness. Not a permanent unchanging entity is one of them. That's why it is non-self. Here is not a permanent unchanging entity. And because it is impermanent, therefore it is empty. Empty nature existence. That is the profound teaching of anatta. So anatta doesn't mean nothingness. That's why the Buddha never called it no self or self. These are the two extremes. He called it in between. He said, this is non-self. It's not self. Neither is it no self. But there is something. Can you understand? The human being exists. There is such thing as a living being. There is such thing as a form and mind. This one exists. That's why it's not self or no self. It's not nothingness. There is something, but this something is not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why you cannot call it a self. It's not you. That's why he liberated his mind. He didn't attach and cling onto this physical body as a self. The mental part as the self, where he knows these are dependent originating condition arising cause of phenomena, not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why there is no self inside there. But there is a human being karmically conditioned out for us to come to this existential world, to live life, to experience all of the beauties, pristine beauties and wonders of life, and also to fulfill our whatever karmic conditioning, our vows to cultivate and all those things, then to live life, to develop all the understanding of life and to perfect ourselves. So this understanding is very important. That's why the enlightened one, they will know even this form and mind or the human being is not me, but this is the vehicle and tool that I come to this existential world, to live life, to experience life, and to do other things. So this one is subject to karma. That's why there is a duty that you have to do towards this law of karma. So this understanding is where the teaching of the Buddha stand out, so different from others. So this is the beauty of his teaching. So Anattalakkhana Sutta is very powerful. You can reflect and contemplate on it, you will awaken. That's why he asked the bhikkhu after he finished the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. He asked them, O bhikkhu, is this body self? They cannot understand. Then later on, the Buddha prompted them. He said, if it sell, it will not bring about suffering, because you can have this ability to say, please don't get old, don't get sick, and don't die. But it can't, because it goes the way of nature. That's why this body is not a self. Then after that, he continued. He said, is the body satisfactory? The form of mind is not satisfactory. They know, because this one will grow old, get sick, and die. It goes the way of nature. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity that remains forever, eternal. Then when they start to see all this and understand all this, then the Buddha say, whatever that is non-self leads to suffering, misery, affliction. Is it right to say this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine? So straight away, they awaken. Really? Because it is so easy, so direct. So once you understand it's not a self, that it is non-self, then you understand anatta. Just like the Diamond Sutta, each year you wave off. Because within our conditioned world, everything is conditioned dhamma. Conditioned dhamma means dependent on condition, they arise. When conditions sustain itself, it continues to exist. When conditions cease to be, it ceases to be. So is there any reality? The coming and the going. He know you, he know me. Yeah, this is not a permanent, unchanging entity. Even the human form and mind, the human being, they are sustained by the three conditions that manifest and animate us into a human being. First, we need a physical body with all the organ functioning. Then we need a consciousness, which actually came to us during the birth process. So the rebirth consciousness slowly, slowly become conditioned and become more and more sophisticated. With these two alone, we cannot survive. We need a third entity, a third condition. And that is our karmic force, our life force, that sustain life, that pumps our heart and deliver all the blood with all the oxygen to nourish our organ, to do all the work. That's how we animate into a human being. We have the powers of life, the life force that pumps our heart and give rise to the powers of life. And these three things, when they come together, the human being arises, animated. That's why when consciousness separate, they say you die. Who die? No one die. It's just the condition behind its arising, the sustaining. They separate and it says, or the physical body can never allow the consciousness to stay in because brain damage or spinal cord had problem or major organ failure. Then the physical body cannot function. This consciousness have to leave because it's already brain dead. Or the life force no more. The heart fail to pump. There is no more life force. There is no more heartbeat. That's why everything fail, everything collapse. And that is what death is all about. So when you understand all this, you become different, you awaken. So the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the Sutta on Anatta is very beautiful. When you understand all this is non-self, dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena, he know you, he know me, then you become different. Then you will not cling, you will not hold to this fire aggregate of form and mind, the so-called human being. But you will make use of it. You know, this is beautiful, the vehicle and tool for us to come. So we use it, not to be burdened by it, not to be deluded by it. So ability to have the wisdom to see all this clearly and awaken and use it to do whatever that we need to do, means to perform our duty towards this law karma, we will just do that. Then life becomes beautiful, meaningful. So this is what the teaching is. Okay, we stop there. So now we open up for meditation reporting.
Suddenly I don't know, suddenly I'm blank. I don't know what to say.
No, because you are not used to all this type of sharing. Later on, you will develop the ability to share. Because what you need to do is don't panic. Without you knowing, you actually were not confident of yourself, but actually you can. Like I said, there are only three things that you need to reflect on. Do I have any question? Do I have anything to share? Then do I have any meditation to report? So once you zoom in on this tree, it becomes very easy. Do you have any question? Okay, and then you will know how to move. If you don't have question, do you have anything to share? Means comment on what has been shared or discussed and all these things. Or third one, if you have been cultivating, do you have anything to report in your meditation experience? Then you will have a lot of ideas flowing in.
My meditation, I feel, is still need time to understand more lah. Maybe I got a question lah. I got a question. This one is last time I heard from one of the Sado one. She says that cultivate until a certain level, then pain become a concept, you know. Then he give an example. He says last time his teacher, when he was having this chronic illnesses, should be very pain one. For normal people should be very pain one. Teacher able to, when they come to visit him, the teacher able to sit up and then talk to them and then talk dharma, talk to them, you know. Yeah. Then the sadhu was very curious and asked the teacher, actually, do you feel pain? According to the doctor, it should be very pain. Do you feel pain? And then they asked the teacher, I don't really feel pain, but I feel a lot of heat. I don't really understand. So maybe this question was in my head.
So let me help you to understand. So the question that you raise is, you find it very interesting where that side door told you, understand? But I realize a lot of Dharma practitioner or what we call so-called Buddhists, they never inquire into whatever that was told to them. They didn't investigate. Because for me, it's very simple. Nothing special and nothing curious about those things. Yeah, this is a very normal happening. So like pain, he said, after you cultivate after a certain level, then pain becomes a concept. Do you agree? You can just find out on your own, inquire. What do you mean by after a certain level? Is after you have developed certain wisdom or understanding? Or after you have developed certain ability to focus and concentrate and develop the calm mind, all these are not clear. So cultivation is not about all these things. Then they are more interested in all this phenomenal, like can endure pain, and pain become a concept. What is all this? This is, pardon me for saying that, this is not Dhamma. Dhamma is the understanding behind. When you label it as a pain, it becomes what?
Pain.
mental hindrance, understand or not? You don't like that feeling. It's like painful feeling. You want to push it away. So mental hindrance, aversion has a reason. That is the Dhamma, but it's not thought. He said pain become a concept. What is the meaning of that? Every word is a concept. Everything you label is a concept. Do you understand? Concepts are created by memory, knowledge. But when you silence your mind and be with it, what happens? You ask Scotland, Scotland can answer you. It's just that sensation, that tactile phenomenon. No word, nothing. When you are with it, it ceases to be. But because of bodily condition, sometimes the injury, the sickness, or whatever, then it triggers off that so-called tactile phenomenon. That mental phenomenon that don't understand will corrupt, will cling, will hold. Then it becomes a stressful sensation, an unpleasant sensation. We are so used to pleasant sensation. So when it's a sensation, before it conditioned into pain, before we label it, there was no mental hindrance. You can be peaceful. You can be with it. Your body is just a body. Patient endurance with wisdom. Because they are the bodily condition. You got two choices. Attach, become miserable over it, and cry over it, and become very severely afflicted by it. That pain, the misery. The other one is, this is a reality. If I have sickness, disease, this thing will happen. Body is just a body. It goes the way of nature. If I can stay with it, silent with awareness, then I can develop the understanding of it. Suffering is to be understood. If I don't attach, I don't cling the awareness, it will disperse. Where there is no thought, nothing. That is silent. But to do that, you have to train your mind to be very mindful, aware, very stable. If you don't have that ability, all these are words, concept, knowledge, no point. Do you understand? So Dhamma cultivation is to develop the wisdom to the direct seeing, the understanding, where you understand all these words got no meaning. To me, it doesn't serve anything. It's not cultivation. But regarding the Saito, say the teacher or what, when they are sick or what, according to them, very painful. But once you come and ask for Dhamma, yeah, this is something that can actually bring them that pure energy to actually develop the mindfulness and the awareness to share. Even my nature can. When I was having a flu or cold, running nose at the retreat, you all know. The moment the Dhamma starts, or somebody asks me certain thing, and when I share from my nature, I heal, I recover. Then all those things is gone. But this is not psychic or special ability. No, it's because that nature is with that understanding that it just manifests through that nature. That's why straight from the heart, direct from the nature, it come out. That's why during that time, that pure energy, the vibration, the understanding. But even, let's say, I go through all those running nose or whatever, I will not complain because that is the reality of the form. It goes the way of nature. Then I know if I need to rest, I rest. But when I can feel that I can continue, that's why I continue. That's why I never really rest. Have you seen me really rest? No, hardly. Unless when I know my body cannot take it already, then what for? No need to become a hero, understand? Why you want to impress people? Well, this body is just a body. It goes the way of nature. it was never you. It was never me. So this is a very good tool for me to use to come to this existential world. So I understand it, I use it, and it's so beautiful. So all this understanding must be there. Let me understand. I realize you got a weakness. You are very interested in hearing all these things, then like very impressed and all this. You never reflected and contemplated into it. Actually, it's very easy to understand. When you have mindfulness, awareness, and the silent mind like Colonial, they will know. And all this, no meaning. Hopefully, this explanation can help you, Demi.
Today is a bit weird. Today is like, how to say, in the morning when I'm doing this kind of like meditation, then I'm doing that, then suddenly the mosquito was continuously coming to bite me, even though I was affected by it, I feel like, yeah, then I was like waving it away, but continued to come. But that time the mind was pretty calm. Then I was thinking, why I don't have the intention to want to kill it, but I noticed I have, but I just continue to wave it away only, and I just then I found that it's quite calm in the morning. And then just now when doing the meditation for the evening, then I felt that, maybe in the whole day I was rushing to do work and then everything, and then to come to the class and everything. Then I found that there's a pressure when I'm sitting down, a big pressure at the heart area. you explained about the pain or something of xia dog. That's not the question. I feel like a lot of stress at the heart area, then almost I like cannot breathe at that, and then like, okay, now it's different already.
Yeah. Now, you know why or not? That you are not relaxed, you are not focused. Listen to this again, Demi. I have explained many times. Pardon me for saying this, because not only you, a lot of other kaya mental who are not serious, they have this same problem like you. You must have clear understanding of what you are doing in the name of meditation. So what is meditation? Meditation is to realize the silent mind, to train your mind to be aware, to be stable, to stabilize the awareness so that you can be the true mind. So are you training your mind? You are training your mind, the mind calm and all those things is not important. The question is, am I training my mind? That's why you all cannot progress. You didn't even try to develop the silent mind to realize the awareness nature inside. You are easily distracted by so many things because most of the time you are heedless. Mosquito also can distract you. Many things can distract you. Then like your mind very busy, your work, your career, you have to prepare for class and all those things. Then you realize your heart like aching, cannot breathe, stress. Means you are not relaxed. You are not mindful. You are not aware. You don't have clarity. You don't have the mental faculties, especially sadha, virya, sati. Do you see that point? So, to meditate is to just silence your mind, maintain awareness, don't try to know, don't try to do anything. Stabilize it so that you can have this ability to realize your true mind, your silent mind, which is the meditative mind. Then you can become ever mindful. Once the awareness stabilizes, the awareness will be there. You didn't even try to realize the silent mind, not to say stabilize it. That's why a lot of you all cannot progress. It's because of that. It's so simple. But because you are more interested in other things, that's why your worldly life also, you like rushing around. You are not with the moment. You are not relaxed. The key is relax. Are you relaxed? peaceful? Have clarity. Are you mindful? Are you aware? Do you have clarity? Then once you develop all this spiritual faculty and the sign of mind, it will transform you and you will become very different. That's how you progress. Otherwise, you will continue to report similar thing. I won't say the same thing, similar thing. Like just now, one moment the side door question, then next moment your morning meditation, then next moment you tell me you can see thought and there's another thought behind the thought. And all these are the frequent questions that come from the active thinking, the knowledge. That's why you didn't really understand what has been shared and taught. You think you know, pardon me for saying that, but you didn't really understood and penetrate. That's why if you all find it so difficult to progress and you are like, of confidence, like you just asked that my meditation is still very charged. I think I still need some time to understand. It's not like that. All this is the thought telling you. The understanding is, am I training my mind? Am I following, like Po Cheng say, the advice of what Brother Teo has shared with me? All the teaching, all the instruction. Listen to it and write it down. Have I done this? Meditation has to be done with understanding. Have I developed the understanding? Meditation is heedfulness. What is heedfulness? Ever mindful. To be ever mindful, I have to train my mind to be aware, mindful. That stabilizes it, to be ever mindful. Have I started that? If that also you haven't started, it's very difficult to progress. Can follow or not, Tammy? Yeah? Don't worry, I'm not reprimanding you or telling you in a very negative. No, this is for your benefit, for you and other Kayamita who are not serious enough to actually progress. This is what I see. Those who progress, they have faith in what I say, then they just follow exactly. Even Chin Hao, they all they start to know now. Then a lot of other Kayamita. But there are some like you and a few who didn't really go into it with enough understanding, and because your mind is so conditioned, because most of you all are exposed to a lot of traditional teaching. Like last time, even Dr. Jayanta in the early days when he came to my class, he was the same. So conditioned that he find everything I share and teach like completely opposite of what he learned, he used to know, and very confusing. Then I told him, don't worry, he will take you a while, but you will come to understand. What is important is have an open mind, investigate, find out. What I have been doing in the past, have I benefited? Have it changed me? If you have not benefited, you have not changed you, then why are you continuing it? Will it will still lead to the same negative result? But if you have transformed, you change you and make you a different person and improve your life, then you know you are on the right path. If you have more and more heedfulness, more and more tranquility, more and more understanding, you will not be stressed out. You will not be heedless. You will not be doing all these things that you describe. Can follow, tell me, huh? Hope this helps. So thank you for bringing up all these questions. Very good. That's why I say you must ask. Don't be shy. Who is shy? Your thought is shy, not you. You are beautiful inside. Tell me. Have faith. Your nature is like all enlightened beings. You have the Buddha nature. You have the true mind, the silent mind, the meditative mind inside. But realize it. Cultivate it. Okay.
Yeah, I nearly need to cultivate more faith.
Then listen to what I share today. Then you can become more clear, focused on what you are doing in the name of meditation. No more like last time, the thought keep on telling you this, telling you that, then you try this, try that, try everywhere. But finally, you never come back to your nature, your awareness, your true mind. If you are not there, you cannot meditate. Your Hui Ning already said, first hallmark is no thought. You can't have that state of mind, then how can you meditate? How can you understand the real Dhamma? To have no thought means aware, silent, without thought. The moment you are without thought, you are already aware. Stabilize that nature, as simple as that. Get that understood and do it. Okay? Tell me? Huh? Can, huh? Sadhu. Yeah.
Thank you, Susan, for nominating me.
Today you should thank Susan. Huh? She really did you a favor and give you condition to report and ask. And many other Kayamita can benefit from the sharing of yours too. Sadhu to you, Tammy.
And hi, Brother Teo, Mrs. Teo, and fellow Kalamitas. I would like to do a sharing.
Yeah, very good, Sadhu.
The sharing of my meditation today. This morning. Because this morning I was preparing to bring my father for vaccination.
Oh, Sadhu. Wow, fellow Paiti.
As usual, I normally wake up at 5 o'clock, and I sit down and do the meditation.
Then after that, you radiate metta and all those things. Yeah, very good.
Yes. So today's meditation this morning was as I sit down, I do the chanting.
Yeah.
Then after that, I read the yellow card.
Sadhu, the Bodhisattva vow,
Then I sit down and I'll start to meditate, normally around 15 minutes, 20 minutes.
Good enough. Sadhu. Early morning, very quiet.
Yes. And I find the morning easier.
Less because, traffic and all those things. Less distraction. And the nature's energy, vibration, very conducive.
Yes. And also the body and the mind.
Fresh.
Not like sometimes at the end of the day after
work. Tired, lethargic. Because you have to rest.
I would like to share my experience today.
Very good. Sadhu, go ahead.
So as I sat down and I start to meditate and start to begin silent, as I sit down, I start to observe, actually my mind have thoughts coming up.
Yeah, the movement coming of Sankara,
And these thoughts are like jumping here and there.
Then
I suddenly just practice, I just realized, okay, relax.
Silent, relax, maintain awareness. Let it cease. It will slow down. Then after a while.
Start to focus on breathing.
Yes, that one very good. It's your good anchor.
That's what I want to. It's a realization. It's actually an anchor.
It anchor your mind so that it doesn't move. It doesn't think. Then you are mindful of the movement of your breath. That is anapanasati.
And I feel like as if it's actually very nice. I'm not
very
forcing
pretty.
Myself not to think.
Correct. And you're very relaxed.
Letting it mindful. Flow.
Correct.
But I'm anchoring myself through my breathing. I'll bring back myself a breath.
When you are aware, you cannot think. That's it.
And the breathing helps. This mind thinking everywhere.
Definitely.
Come back there.
In the early day, I also do the same anapanasati. That was what I came to know on my own. Then I did it. And it stabilized. Very beautiful.
And I felt it was very helpful as a...
Oh, definitely.
It's okay that I have many things, but that helps me anchor. Like what you said, anchor.
The moment you anchor, the thinking stops. Then you become very calm, very peaceful, very soothing. Then very natural. It just follow the flow. There is no stress, no like the mind forcing the breath. All very natural. That awareness and the breath move as one in perfect harmony and synchrony. That's how you become peaceful, calm, aware. Then piti will arise, sukhang will arise. All these meditative state will arise. Then you will know it's so beautiful. That silence, the awareness, that can bring about all this byproduct of the true mind. Then you will realize your true mind and silent mind when the breath all stop. Later on, it will stop. Later on, it will become very slow. Then like no more breathing. Stay there. Don't do anything. Just stay there. Then that mind will enter sati. Then that time you become very different again. Where you are familiar with, be with it. So now be with the breathing until the breathing become very quiet, very subtle and very still. Means the mind is slowly, slowly transforming and develop the transformation to become very quiet and very still for you to realize your true mind. So when you realize your true mind, means your mind enters sati. The sati is your true mind, true nature. That nature is just aware, nothing else. That's why you must silence everything and realize that true mind. Let it return this original state before the sankhara activity, before the movement, before the thinking, before the stirring. This is beautiful. Are you continuing?
That was my morning meditation. After that, I come back and make a move to pick up my father.
Yes. Where is the vaccination center?
Oh, I brought him to WTC.
That one very nice. They say very efficient, very fast.
Yes, it is. Because my father is 78 years old. I think until after Raya, still haven't got any appointment.
Oh, luckily you go and register for him, huh?
Yeah, so then when there was an opportunity for Isaac, then we asked him.
Yeah, Isaac, like I also go for Isaac. Mine is next Thursday, 17.
Ah, very good.
My wife also same.
Very good.
Louis also got her appointment beginning of July.
So I also...
Also Isaac, yeah.
During meditation, I also invoke Power Mary, ask for a very smooth and...
Yeah. It will help because
vaccination easy for my father.
Yeah. So that everything will go on well, smoothly, so that your father will be okay and honest. This one help because of filial piety and you are very sincere and you really did a good job. Sadhu to you.
So everything actually they are very organized and they are also very well coordinated.
Correct. I was told very professional too.
And every station, in between the station, there's an usherer to guide you. Yes,
to guide you, to bring you. Very good. They have actually improved the thing. Last time, initially, it was a lot of things not properly thought of and the flow was not smooth. Then over the period of the last few months, they improved a lot. I was told even the new vaccination center, the Mega PPV, is very systematic now. Very systematic. I got a few classmates who went, they reported, wow, very systematic.
Yes, I have to say they are very good. Very good.
My
father won't start at 9. So by 9:20, he got his jab ready.
Oh, very fast. Yeah.
Then after that, we go for
observation
for 15 minutes.
Yeah, observation.
15
yeah.
minutes, and then after that, can leave. So it was fast, easy, and it was a breeze. Very, very easy.
Yeah. Like a breeze, they say, very straightforward. Yeah.
And then they explain clearly what you need to do.
Yeah, very good.
So you need to bring a pen and.
Yeah. Be normal about those
and your
things.
IC and
the handphone to take the QR code or whatever.
Yes. But you cannot take picture during the jab.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. But they will explain to you. They will explain to you before, after. They will show you.
Yeah. it's only everything over when you're about to go out, then they got something for you to take photo on. A lot of my classmates took the photo there.
I also realized actually there's a lot of news from Facebook and from others saying this and this and that. Actually, not so cool.
They are
very good.
Professional in that sense.
To all the volunteers and also all the frontline learners, when I see them, I just say thank you.
You will have a lot of joy and gratitude. Yeah. People are willing to sacrifice for the greater good, to get more people to go through the vaccination, so that the herd immunity can be established faster. But the more people get vaccinated, the less will be the spreader. And these people who are vaccinated, the probability of severe COVID attack is very low, very, very. If you are not vaccinated, the statistic shows 8% of those who got COVID-19, they will have severe third stage, fourth stage, or fifth stage type of symptom, and they have breathing difficulty. So the 8% is very high. But once you are vaccinated, most of them will not kena the COVID. Then those who develop antibody are 94% even after the first jab. Then those who kena COVID, most of them either asymptomatic or have symptoms also very mild, stage one, stage two, never even have to admit hospital. That is the good thing about vaccination. And this has actually outweighed a lot of so-called, some people and write about this vaccine having this risk, that risk. Yeah, but those risks are so low. They are talking about 1 point something person in a million now. Means it's 0.0000%, no, very low. 1 in 100 is 1%, 1 in 1,000 is 0.1%, and 1 in 10,000 is 0.01. Then 100,000, then million. That's why the number goes down. And people who don't understand, they panic. They're going to worry. But when you understand, that's why like the doctors, they all explain to you and your father, you realize what is in the social media is not so authentic or assuring. Whereas what these people tell you, they are more professional in their approach and understanding. That's why they can actually advise us. And a lot of them, they actually did very well. And it helps to give rise to better what we call control of the pandemic. Otherwise, our country will have very big number. So luckily now, slowly, the numbers are slowly falling back. Today, I think 5,000 something. Hopefully, with the speed of immunization or vaccination, now they reach 150,000 a day, which is very good. 10 days, we get 1.5 million. So 1 month, 4.5 million is almost 1.5% of the population. So it's a very good rate already. But if they can go further to 200,000 a day, it will be much better. Then 10 days will be 2 million. Or then 6 million is very fast already, 6 million. Yeah, our population, I think, is about 30 million. 30 million, 3 million is 10% now. So we are hitting actually, even at this rate, 15% a month now, and it's very fast, very fast. So 3 months, we get 40%. So our herd immunity will go up. Yeah, once you hit 40-50% like UK and US, actually, a lot of improvement there. You see, they start to have leeway to relax the whatever sanction, and not sanction, but the curb they relax the rules for lockdown and all those things. They start to open up the economy, and many of them, they can even without masks go and have dinner and drink for those fully vaccinated and also. So these are good news. You can continue, Colin. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think at this rate of vaccination,
yeah,
this will also, I feel like it will probably be the last lockdown.
Yes, definitely.
At the end of the year, we can celebrate.
Oh, yes.
And makan-makan together.
Actually, look at September or October.
Yeah.
And things will turn around already. Because if every month they can do 4.5 million, which is about 15%. So 3 months, 45%, we already hit the 50% mark. Very good already. There's most of the population, the elderly one, and I was told they are going towards the younger one now, critical economy and all those things. So they should have done this long ago, then we will turn around faster.
Yeah, and hopefully, probably next year, if there's a condition, I will also like to join if there's any retreat next year.
Hopefully, looks promising now. Because next year, March, we have a lot of time. And I used to share with you all the next retreat, I tell you, a lot of you all will progress and become very different. But this time, a lot of you will understand what this meditation is, awareness-based. And when we do it with understanding and we share the collective consciousness and that nature there, I tell you, a lot of things can just happen. Then you can see the joy, the transformation and all those things. So this is going to become something very beautiful. Our Kayamita force is so strong now. That's why you all have to develop the faith, sadha, virya, then diligently move. Sadhu. Very good. Anything else?
And the last one is every day right now, because I'm meditating every day in the morning.
Oh,
I always make a point to end the meditation with like our normal
meditation. Sharing of merit,
sharing of merits, and also blessing for the world.
Well, for the world, very good.
So before ending with the aspiration for the Imina, Puna,
Kamina, to avoid the foolish and meet up with the wise, so that Nibbana can be realized as soon as possible. Sadhu, very good.
That's more all from my side.
Okay, very good. I think just nice we can end. Thank you so much, Brother Colin. So we would like to thank Tammy, Brother Colin, and also Susan for nominating Tammy for nominating Brother Colin. So today's sharing is very good. We even share certain things about Colin's understanding and philopiety and also the vaccine, everything. So this type of sharing is very meaningful, very useful. So let us together rejoice one more time. Sadhu.
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 Okay.